I know it's tough to find concrete storylines after exhibition games in late February when the regular season is still just over a month away. But for me, at least, I don't know how you feel about this. At the same time, it's just nice to have baseball back. It's kind of like getting a warm hug.
Even if it is the barn burner that we just experienced, as was to be expected, of course. The first game of spring, hitters usually will have the advantage here, show. Pitchers are still very much getting into the rhythm and getting back into the swing of a full game and just the atmosphere and facing live hitters that you're not necessarily that familiar with. So we are seeing very much what was expected here, but we have to tip our caps to Chad Dallas, I want to say. That was a very, very impressive outing to start the game. Really set a tone that was later just demolished by the rest of the pitching staff on both sides, but it was fun to see, and it was also extremely fun to see how well the Blue Jays were swinging the bat here, really, really capitalizing on mistakes, of course, led by Dalton Varsho, who had quite the afternoon himself.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to the spring edition of Jays Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're discussing the 14-13 loss for the Jays. Not that the score really matters all that much, but still, if you want to shoot a text to us, 590-590 is where you can text us. That's the People's Text Line, which is always open. We will take phone calls as we ramp up throughout the spring, but for now, texts go to 590-590. Chad Dallas, though, did look good. This is a guy, Julia, who largely had a fastball and a slider last year. He added the cutter for his third pitch in the last, couple of months, in the last year, I would say. Some prospect writers, including DM Fox, who I think people should follow if you are into Blue Jays prospects, but a lot of these guys noting that Chad Dallas had some early command on his fastball up in the zone relative to last year. It was just the one inning. He got two strikeouts, three whiffs on five swings. But again, you don't want to read too much into things that happened in spring training, but at the same time, it was nice to see one of the top 15 prospects for the Jays overall acquit himself decently well enough in just one inning of work.
And listen, if the ball is coming out that well out of his hand, if the breaking ball is breaking as well as it is this early in the spring, it is pretty fair to draw a conclusion that this guy is very much on the right path here. It is true that we can't draw any hard and fast conclusions out of one spring outing, especially this early in the spring, but the fact that he came in here and didn't really throw a lot of hanging breaking balls, he was actually very, very sharp, then that tells you that this guy has a good trajectory ahead of him. And I was it was interesting to hear Dallas talk to Buck and Ben in the broadcast and really try to single out what was the difference between his first year in the minors and his second year in the minors and the huge leap forward that he took. And he attributed it in large part to confidence, right? Just giving himself credit and not giving the hitters, I guess, too much of the credit here. And then that's what we saw today. He pitched with confidence. It was inspiring to see.
It was pretty funny, kind of, when Pearson comes in the second inning while Chad Dallas is doing his interview, all kind of like on the step of the dugout or whatever, chatting with Ben and Buck. And during his chat, Nate Pearson gives up a solo bomb to, I think he actually gave up two home runs, he gave up a two-run shot to Weston Wilson and a solo bomb to Scott Kingery. And it was just in the middle of the conversation, he just goes, "Wow, I can't hear you guys," because I guess it was just people are going nuts down near the field. But it definitely was a good outing from someone who, I'm not sure he'll factor into the major league roster this year. But I think a large part of spring training, too, is just seeing what kind of organizational depth has been constructed across a bunch of different levels, because a bunch of these guys, some of them will play in AAA, some of them will play in AA, some single A, and we got to see a number of them whose names we've heard before. Like, we saw Yastra Zulueta, for example, and I mean, this was a guy who last year, Julia, we thought might have at some point been called up to the major league roster, and that never really happened. But he got hit more or less really hard, and you made a really good point that pitchers are not where hitters are. Hitters are, and Buck talked about this a lot in the broadcast, that hitters just will be a little bit ahead of most people. But even so, I was a little surprised to see what we saw from Zulueta. I mean, a lot of guys got hard hit balls off of him right away. Again, first game of spring training, I think he'll, for pretty much every pitcher, it's about just shaking off the rust and developing routines and getting into rhythms. But you hope that's something, and Nate Pearson as well, you hope those two guys can take what happened today and kind of adjust just a little bit whatever their routine might be if they need to going forward. Because for Zulueta, for Pearson, and probably for Zach Pop as well, they're probably all somewhat, maybe to lesser degrees, Zulueta versus Pearson and Pop, but they're probably all battling with each other for, you know, the last spot or two spots in the bullpen on the major league roster.
Listen, throwing 97 is one thing. Throwing an effective 97 is a different thing, right? You need to also be able to locate those pitches, and those pitches still need to have enough life, enough movement to deceive hitters, and that is what we're missing here. Again, very understandable at this point in the spring, but this is something to look out for, not just with Nate Pearson, but also with Zulueta, because that has been in large part what has perhaps prevented Pearson from reaching that next level that we know that we expected him to reach with the Blue Jays. It's actually capitalizing on the natural velocity that he possesses and making that work in his favor with life and movement as well in order to actually miss those bats. So something to keep an eye on over the rest of the spring for Pearson, for Zulueta as well. You're right. This is it's not a huge competition that is happening in the bullpen right now, but there are open spots. And so these guys are very much auditioning here, just not the start that they would want, but we see that there is very much room for improvement, and we expect that to happen as spring progresses.
So here are a couple of things I am buying after game one of spring training. So a lot of this is with a grain of salt, obviously, maybe multiple grains of salt, pretty large ones. But Nate Pearson debuted his splitter, and he struck out, I think it was David Dahl with the split finger pitch, and woo, that looked nasty. And again, like we talked about his command and how you can throw high velo, touch the triple digits. We've seen Nate Pearson do all of those things, and he has to command that split finger more, obviously. This is like literally the first time fans have gotten to see it. You and I have gotten to see it, really. So it's like your very early returns on it, but if he can command that consistently, that is something I will very much look out for, because that is, like, if you're Nate Pearson, that has got to give you a leg up if you can command a split finger pitch. It also makes me wonder, I mean, we've heard so much about different guys learning from, you know, from other pitchers on the roster, and I just made me wonder if Pete Walker was like, you learn a split finger, and you're going to learn a split finger, and you're also going to learn a split finger, kind of like Oprah handing out presents.
Listen, if you have a guy like Kevin Gausman who's there and who's usually very open to chatting with young guys and with minor leaguers and, you know, being sort of a mentor or a leader, if you have a guy like that that is willing to do this this job, this mentorship, then you might as well take advantage of it. It is very clear that it has worked for the Blue Jays, and a lot has been said about, you know, the splitter being the pitch in vogue right now.
Right.
We know that the splitter is the hot pitch to have right now, but it is extremely effective, right? It is extremely deceiving, and for a guy like Pearson who throws with the velocity that he does, developing a splitter, which is going to be relatively, you know, high velo, but then break as it gets to the plate, that may be the difference maker for him in what he's looking to do here, especially as a full-time reliever, right? We have given up on the idea of Pearson as a reliever. He has shown flashes of consistency there. He has shown that he can be effective out of the pen at times. And what the splitter does, or what it would do, is it would add that element of swing and miss that may have been missing for him in the past campaign with the Blue Jays, and maybe a better chance of actually sticking in that bullpen.
What are you buying? I said the Pearson split finger. Dalton Varsho, how he's looked, Bo Bichette stealing bases. I mean, he was still one base, but still, I mean, is there something you are, or Elvis Martinez, is there something you're buying after game one of spring training, Jules?
Yeah, that was going to be my pick, actually, is Elvis.
Okay.
It seems like he is on a mission here,
yeah,
right? It seems like he is ready to take that next step. We saw very good at-bats from him today, very patient, very disciplined at the plate, took a walk, not a ton of swing and misses, and then he almost had a home run. We were talking pregame about how pretty his swing is and how effortless it is, and it was exactly what happened there. Saw a pitch that he could hit. It was right in the middle of the plate. You have to go after it. He did, and he just missed. Still, Blue Jays cashing in a run there, again, showing the good that can come out of just putting the ball in play. That's what we saw from Morelvis, and he seemed pretty determined. He seemed very comfortable as well. So if I were to make, you know, say a bold prediction or whatever, I would say that Morelvis is very much on his way to making his major league debut this season. Maybe not on opening day by any means, but we will see him at some point with the Blue Jays this season.
Yeah, we saw him stand up at the plate for the first time. I think it was in the bottom of the sixth inning. So that resulted in a walk. I think it was a five-pitch walk. He had a checked swing, but didn't really swing the bat that first time up. The very next time up, he swung at the very first pitch, and it was an immediate ground out. And that was towards the end of the game where you kind of thought to yourself, okay, like maybe he needs to prove himself here a little bit. Maybe he was a little anxious, perhaps, because it did kind of look like, I mean, for a guy who we talk about the power, but obviously for a guy who needs to work on strikeouts and his swing decisions, I was kind of like, didn't love the swing decision. But again, maybe he was a little anxious. He's a young guy, wants to make an impact. And then he almost did make an impact down by two runs late. Obviously a run did score on the ball. The outfielder dropped at the very end of the game. But I like the Morelvis pick. I still think we will see him play for the Blue Jays this season, but I agree with you. It might be closer, let's say, like the All-Star break than opening day. I wanted to get to Bo Bichette with you.
Right.
Bo went 2 for 2 on the first four pitches he saw. I think he ended up going 2 for 3 because he popped out a little bit later on. But he stole a base as well. Buck noted on the broadcast that Bo has looked very trim, and we heard him talk to the media a couple of days ago how he's added Pilates, and he's added swimming, and he's added Muay Thai to his off-season regimen. So first of all, I think that's what you just want to hear from someone who you believe is the leader of your team, your roster. And the guys are also talked on the broadcast about how he made a speech to the team. We have to be better. Like I think Bo's hitting all the right notes, but obviously in order to continue to be able to have the legitimacy to do that, Jules, he has to perform on the field. He also, Buck, in noting that he looked trim, also was talking about Bo stealing bases, and he did swipe second in one of those innings. I do wonder if he has slimmed down a little bit. And if he's just generally trying to be more aggressive, I kind of wonder if we do see Bo try and wreak a little more havoc on the base paths. I know when he was an All-Star in 2021, he stole 25 bases. And last year, his second time as an All-Star, he only stole 5. So, I mean, 5, I was saying this to you during the game, but 5 bases stolen for someone we think is a top 10, maybe even a top 5 shortstop in all of Major League Baseball. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I got to imagine that most of the top shortstops in baseball probably steal more than 5 bases in any given season.
And it was kind of an outlier, too, because we have seen Bo steal bases and make that part of his game, right? So last year he stole 5. The year before he stole 13. And like you said, in 2021, that was a career high in the majors for him with 25. But he has stolen as many as 32 bases in the minors. So this is a guy that has that aspect to his game pretty much if he wants to I guess evolve in that way. Now it does seem like that is the effort that he's putting in right now, and we saw that early and often today without a guy like, say, Whit Merrifield, right? Yeah. You look at what the Blue Jays subtracted this offseason, who was very much the havoc wreaker, right? We said it so many times on this broadcast that it was fun to watch Whit Merrifield take first base because you never knew what could happen. The Blue Jays need to retrieve that from elsewhere. And if Bo is going to take the lead, then the Blue Jays should feel very comfortable because not only is he someone who can do that, who is athletic enough to take on more of that role, he is also someone that as a leader, the Blue Jays trust in making those decisions.
Yep.
It will also be very, very interesting to see, not necessarily in spring training, but as the regular season gets underway, some of those base running decisions for Bo.
Sure.
We know that there was a questionable one in the wild card round last year which he kind of went and he thought he was going to be safe, and he stood by his decision afterwards. He ended up getting called out in a very close game that ended up with the Blue Jays losing during that wild card round. So just seeing how he learns from those moments and how he implements that on the day-to-day here in the regular season is going to be a fascinating transition to watch. Now, the Blue Jays should have confidence in Bo in when it comes to base running. And if he wants to expand that side of his game, he is very much well positioned to do so.
I just thought it was really interesting. And the reason I mentioned his offseason regimen is just because, first of all, certainly leading by example, but he mentioned things that just seemed would seem to expand on flexibility, right? Like Muay Thai, a martial art, right? You got Pilates and just swimming in general is good for you. But adding all of those aspects of training instead of not just going up there and like lifting weights and doing all those kinds of things. And obviously baseball players have to be as flexible as possible, but it's just, I just appreciated hearing that he had added that to his preparation, because I think one of the things he had mentioned to the media earlier in the week was he wants to be the best version of himself from 2023 as close to every day as possible. And I mean, it's funny for him to say that because he basically already plays every day. Like, this is a guy who plays 162 games if he can. And the only reason he didn't do that last year is because he got injured. You know, like a freak injury, essentially, right? He's been a pretty durable and reliable player over the course of his, like, generally speaking, over the course of his career. So to hear him that he is trying to do to hear that he's trying to add those aspects to his game in addition to maybe amping up other aspects of certainly being able to have a greater range defensively and also making base running decisions, that it can only help. There's no way it can hurt.
Let's not forget that he was a pretty prolific tennis player as well, right? When you can
was
see
he really?
It,
I didn't know that.
That's right. And you can see it in his swing too, that I guess that influence of tennis and the way that his body moves with his swing, all of that plays a factor into the player that he is. And we have seen so many baseball players sort of turn to this more multi-sport approach when getting ready and when, you know, building together their game as professional baseball players. You have Kevin Gausman, you know, taking hints from javelin throwers, right, on his motion. You have so many guys, so many pitchers warming up, say, by throwing footballs. So that is very much part of the modern game as we know it.
Sure.
And we have seen the results of it on the field. So for a guy like Bichette, who has experience in other sports and who has found a way to incorporate it into his baseball as well, that should put him in a good position. I'm very interested to hear and see more of that intersport facet of his game here.
Speaking of intersport facets of people's games, we heard from Dalton Varsho, who spoke to Blair and Barker on their podcast, the extra innings edition of Blair and Barker. And Varsho talked about how he like to kind of change his bat swing path and to get himself into shape. He talked about chopping down trees, being a woodcutter, a lumberjack, essentially. And I don't know if that's what is going to be what turns around Varsho's year or not, but he looked pretty good today. And again, it is spring training. You want to see how that continues. But I think the only thing for me with Varsho is a bounce back season for a lot of guys is what we're going to be discussing a lot this year. And certainly Bo less so, because he was one of the more consistent guys, but certainly for Vladdy and for Kirk and for Springer. And I think for Dalton Varsho, beyond what we actually got for him today, and he played, I would say, pretty well, especially at the plate, it's important, I think, for, and we mentioned this when it came to pitchers, and I think it's the same holds true for position players as well, when it comes to finding some kind of rhythm. And that has got to, at least in part, start now.
Right.
And I think Varsho, it's going to be, I mean, we didn't see Vladdy play today. We didn't see Springer play today. Maybe those are conversations we're having tomorrow. But today, with Varsho in there for a very short period of time, I did like what I saw from him. And got to cash in some runners in scoring position as well, which we did not see a lot of last year.
There you go. It goes back to plate approach, right? When he was talking to Blair and Barker, one thing that he really hammered home was simplifying the approach, simplifying the swing, looking for the right pitch. Well, if the right pitch is a first pitch 91 mile per hour fastball like he got in his first at bat, then you smoke it for a double, no problem, but be ready to hit whatever comes your way. And in both occasions here, when he had a single and a double, if I'm not mistaken, both of those balls were pulled to the right field, which is what he does best. So you could see the simplicity, the soundness of his mechanics really at play. And, you know, speaking earlier about what you buy, what you don't buy here, show early on in the spring, it seems like this more streamlined approach in communication, more streamlined approach offensively, period, may be paying immediate dividends. So that is very much something that we can also watch out for, because today, we really, really saw the Blue Jays capitalizing on pitchers' mistakes. As the spring goes on and regular season gets underway, of course, these mistakes are going to be less and less. We understand that. The number will dwindle a little bit as the pitchers get more into a rhythm by themselves. But so far, what we saw was very much the Blue Jays being ready to hit those mistakes, and they did so today.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. We're here for a couple more minutes. And I did say you can shoot your texts to 590-590, name and location. Still a couple more minutes to do that. Why don't we read a couple of those texts, Julia? Actually, this one was a pretty simple one. It was Justin from Parry Sound. So happy to hear your voices again. Here's to a great season ahead. Go Jays. I always appreciate those ones.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's very kind.
That one's always really nice. I see one here from Jay in Pickering. Jay says, let's just say there's an injury in the staff and Ricky Tiedemann and or Chad Dallas comes up and pitches very well. Do you see them running a six-man rotation post-injury? It's definitely possible. However, I will say for me, and obviously like Chad Dallas acquitted himself well today, Ricky Tiedemann, hamstring injury, maybe we might not see him for a little while until Schneider said he is truly day to day before the game. But I actually think the person who has the most likely to be the sixth guy, let's say, is probably Bowden Francis. And, you know, we're obviously going to see him very soon here in spring training, but I could see them running a 6-man rotation. And I got to think, Julia, I mean, the Blue Jays starting rotation, they were the last rotation to use a sixth man in all of Major League Baseball last year.
They used eight starters total all year.
That's crazy.
Tied for, I think, the least amount of starters in the season.
They were the healthiest starting rotation all season because, you know, Manoah had his struggles, but not a lot of that was due to health. It was just performance related. And then Ryu comes back and basically is immediately good. So I think there is certainly a chance they could run a 6-man rotation, but you know, for now, even though it is hard to duplicate what you do on a year-to-year basis, I got to think that Bowden Francis is probably the guy who'd get the first call-up to be the sixth man or the long man or whatever you want to call it. And maybe they might entertain sixth man, but I don't know. They probably don't want to do that.
I would agree with you. If Francis can maintain what we saw from him last year, then he's in a very, very good position to be that sixth guy for the Blue Jays. And it will all depend on where they are in the standings and what the strategy dictates when it comes to a 5-man or a 6-man rotation. We have seen teams deploy that a lot more, especially after the break, in which you're trying to play the matchups as well as play the numbers and the calendar year and trying to figure all of that out and piece together consistent outings, especially so if you need to win, if you're in a position that you're still vying for that playoff spot. So it will all depend on where the Blue Jays are, but I would agree with you that before Dallas, before those guys, Bowden Francis would be in line to be that sixth starter.
See, I think we don't see Ricky Tiedemann pitch for the Blue Jays this year.
I don't think so either.
I'm not saying that because I don't think he's ready. It's just I bet there just won't be a huge need. And to Jay's question, if there was a need, they'd rather go to other guys first. Like I almost feel like you'd probably see like Mitch White pitch for the Blue Jays before you see Ricky Tiedemann, just only because I feel like they're very careful with young star prospects. And right this second, he's their number one overall prospect. Do you want to rush a guy like that? Probably not. You know, we'll see, though. Am I going to oppose it if he comes up? No, because you want to see prospects be successful, and it's a lot of fun, honestly, talking about prospects. But I would be surprised if they, like, rush Ricky Tiedemann, but I do think he's going to be very good when he does get a chance. Billy and Markham, our pal Billy. Billy texts in to say, Show, say all you want. The Orioles are the class of this division. The second best team in this division are their AAA team, the Norfolk Orioles. Bottom line, the Orioles are loaded. I don't disagree with that, honestly. I don't think if you're talking about like where the Jays are in the AL East here on February 24th, I don't really think the Orioles have done all that much to change people's minds as to why they might be. I don't know if they're going to win 101 games again, but I don't see any reason as to why they're going to significantly fall off when basically everyone came back. I know they lost Kyle Bradish for a little while with the UCL injury, but I mean, they also added some guy named Corbin Burns. Right, so I think they're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, the pitching injuries to me are the biggest question mark when it comes to where the Orioles are going to end up this season, but they continue to be the team to beat in the AL East. I don't believe anyone has an edge between the Yankees and the Blue Jays, to be very, very honest with you. It's difficult for me to say right now if the Blue Jays are better, if the Yankees are better. I don't know, but it is true that the Orioles remain the team to beat. And adding Corbin Burns after having lost a couple of pitchers to injuries here, that's a pretty good addition, and it puts your team in a very, very good place. So they have, you know, basically all of their hitters are coming back. This guy named Jackson Holliday might be very, very close to making his major league debut, which is wild to think about. And they are still, I believe, the top team in this AL East. A lot can happen, though.
Shadow. Oh, yes.
Between now and opening day in itself, a lot can happen. So, but if I had to predict right now, that would be the projection.
I'd probably go, as things stand right now, without having watched the Yankees Orioles play a lot of their spring games, not that that even really matters, but I would probably say Orioles, Yankees, Jays, Rays, Red Sox. Hmm. That's my order. And I think the Yankees and Jays are, and probably Rays, frankly, are probably going to be, and by the end of things, separated by two games.
Right on.
Three games, probably. It'll come down to one series between all three of these teams, probably at some point this year.
Life in the AL East. Yeah. Aren't you happy to be back?
I love being back. This is a lot of fun. I should mention, as we get set to say goodbye here, when it comes to how Jays Talk will unfold this season, it will air after all of the weekend games. So tomorrow as well, Julie and I will be here. During the weekdays, the games will be available via the streams on sportsnet.ca, either /590 or 650 or 960, depending on where you're listening. But no Jays Talk after the day games during the week. But Julia will join me throughout spring training and the regular season. And of course, as usual, once the regular season starts, Blair and Parker will be on Jays Talk duties Mondays to Fridays as they were last year. But Julia, this was a lot of fun. We get to get back in the saddle with you.
Always, always so much fun to be here. Thank you so much, Sho.
That is Julia Kreutz. Always fun doing these shows with her. I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Protection. Protect your vehicle from rust today. For a special offer, find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com. Crown with a K, Canada's number one rust protection. So for Julia, for Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for being with us today. Fun to get back in the saddle, like I said, for Jays Talk. We'll have more after weekend spring training games until the regular season begins, which means we're back tomorrow. We'll talk to you later.